Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Marcus et al. Titled, Exercise Training Attenuates Chemoreflex-Mediated Reductions of Renal Blood Flow in Heart Failure. This article published online May 22, 2015. My guests today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, Lead Author Noah Marcus, and Content Expert Timothy Mush. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Noah Marcus and colleagues examined whether exercise training reduced the carotid chemoreceptor activity-mediated regulation of renal blood flow during the development of heart failure. Noah, tell us why you did this study.
Mary, first, I'd just like to briefly put the study in context clinically. Reduced renal function is found in a significant proportion of heart failure patients and is generally associated with poor prognosis. And one of several important factors thought to contribute to poor or worsening renal function in heart failure is reduced renal perfusion. So my previous work and that of others shows that both tonic and hypoxia-evoked activation of carotid body chemoreceptors contributes to elevated levels of renal sympathetic nerve activity. In addition, a previous study done by Yulong Li showed that exercise training normalized the enhanced chemoreflex control of renal sympathetic nerve activity in heart failure. So in this study, I wanted to determine if both tonic and hypoxia-evoked reductions in renal blood flow in heart failure were mediated by enhanced carotid body chemoreceptor activity, and of course, if exercise training could improve renal blood flow, both at rest and in response to hypoxia.
Okay, thank you. In this study, they found that while all groups showed reduced ejection fraction, blood flow was improved in the animals who underwent the exercise regimen, both at baseline and in response to hypoxia. Tim, why was this finding important?
The findings, I think, very, very important if you understand the chronic heart failure syndrome. If you look at the New York Heart Association classification for heart failure, it's based on exercise capacity. And some of the greatest predictors of morbidity and mortality is the increase in sympathetic activity associated with plasma and norepinephrine concentrations. So any type of therapeutic modality that would reduce sympathetic activation, whether it be through drug therapy or through exercise training, would reduce the sympathetic activation of the nervous system found in heart failure. So this study is very, very important. It's a non-drug therapeutic regimen, and I think it's becoming widely accepted that exercise training can be used in the treatment of this patient population.
With respect to this, I think Tim made some excellent points, and I also just want to emphasize here that sleep disordered breathing is common in heart failure patients. And during these apneic episodes that occur during sleep disordered breathing, patients experience intermittent periods of hypoxia. So this is one reason why the finding that hypoxia-evoked reductions in renal blood flow were accentuated in heart failure and were improved with exercise training. So not only may chemoreceptors contribute to tonic reductions in renal blood flow, but these may be further exacerbated during apneic episodes. And in fact, we've shown in a previous study that carotid body denervation, again, not exercise training, but carotid body denervation also reduced the incidence of these of sleep disorder breathing in this particular heart failure model.
Interesting comments. Along those same lines, in this study, they noted that both carotid body denervation or renal denervation abolished the response to hypoxia. Noah, tell us why those were important controls to do.
And so, Mary, these control experiments were important for two main reasons, I think. The first was that, one, we really wanted to convincingly show that these exaggerated reductions in renal blood flow that occurred during chemoreflex activation were mediated by carotid chemoreflex control of renal nerves. The second is because there has been some interest recently in both renal denervation as well as carotid body denervation as potential therapeutic avenues for heart failure patients. So we also wanted to illustrate that these interventions could, by themselves, confer a beneficial effect in this particular context with respect to renal blood flow in heart failure.
So, you know, the question I would have is, for Noah, is what is the degree of heart failure in these animals? What is the degree of exercise intolerance that has developed in this animal model? Has it been quantified? And is really 13 meters per minute a really intense exercise regimen for this species under the conditions that you've created.
I think Tim's points are well taken, and I actually agree with him in that I don't think this is a particularly intense stimulus for these animals. Again, keep in mind that the animals are being progressively paced into heart failure over the course of 3 to 4 weeks, and they're really only in the most severe heart failure towards the very end. So I think it's actually quite manageable for them for the majority of the pacing period. We can't determine a specific NYHA class, but our animals are paced to the point where there's a 40% reduction in ejection fraction, and that's the primary way by which we define heart failure in these animals.
The question becomes, you know, when you're compromised, how much exercise and what type of exercise regimen can be used as a therapeutic modality? And you're absolutely correct. The progression of heart failure from moderate to severe congestive heart failure, any kind of standard of living type of activity becomes very, very difficult for the patient population. But the important aspect of your study is that exercise training is a potential, very strong therapeutic modality in the treatment of this disease state. And in conjunction with, you know, pharmacological interventions, individuals, their standard of living may increase tremendously. 30 years ago, people would say, you know, once you had a heart attack, go home and take it easy. They would actually go into a period of inactivity, and they became progressively worse. With the advent of cardiac rehab and exercise training, individuals, you know, that have had cardiovascular disease or developed this syndrome, heart failure, appear to do much, much better. And their standard of living increases, their psychological overview of what life is all about, because they're able to go shopping or play around a round of golf, is enhanced, and, you know, people are less depressed. It's interesting that you're using a rabbit model, and you say that rabbits run on the treadmill, but do really rabbits run or do they hop?
And the short answer to your question is that the rabbits do, in fact, hop. That's just the way they get around.
Noah, I'm going to follow up on that point. In the manuscript, you do say that the rabbits were trained to exhaustion at the very beginning, even before the pacing began. So what does exhaustion mean for a rabbit?
I think what you're referring to is that we performed, in essence, an exercise test where the animals hopped on the treadmill to the point where they, in essence, would stop. Even with some encouragement, they would not continue to go. So that's really, it was volitional exhaustion where the animals just refused to hop on the treadmill anymore.
Noah, there's been a lot of interest in carotid body function in heart failure. Why do you think carotid body chemoreceptors are important in heart failure?
So these tiny organs, which are designed to be extremely sensitive to bloodborne stimuli and have projections to the central nervous system, play a role both in control of breathing and control of sympathetic outflow. Carotid body chemoreceptors play an important role in the progression of heart failure because of their potential to affect sympathetic outflow, specifically to the heart and kidney, but also because of their influence on control of breathing and the role they play in the development of sleep-disordered breathing, which is also known to contribute to morbidity and mortality in heart failure.
Noah, where do these studies go from here? In particular, what cellular and molecular avenues are important to pursue?
We'd, of course, like to determine that exercise training initiated after the development of heart failure has similar beneficial effects to what we observed in this study. In addition to that, we were interested in further determining some of the molecular pathways by which exercise training reduces chemoreflux sensitivity. So we're particularly interested in determining the role of several transcription factors, specifically Krupa-like factor 2 and Krupa-like factor 4, which are found in the vasculature. And these are sensitive to shear stress. And they play a role in regulating expression of several proteins that have previously been shown to be important in the enhanced chemoreflux sensitivity in heart failure.
I just want to commend this group for their ability to exercise the rabbit. It's a very difficult species to get to exercise, especially on a treadmill, and they need to be commended on that. So again, defining exhaustion in this animal species is difficult. I think that this group has done an outstanding job of being able to exercise rabbits and to exercise them to the point of fatigue or exhaustion.
Noah Marcus, thank you very much for submitting to AJP Heart. Tim Mush, thank you very much for discussing this article with us. On behalf of both the American Physiological Society and AJP Heart, we appreciate you both participating in this podcast. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.